Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm your host, Jordana Levine, and today I've got a very Earth-based episode for you. Following last week's Taurus full moon, which in true Taurus style was all about practicality, and specifically being practical with material matters such as finances in order to reap the full moon rewards of abundance, I thought it might be nice to give you guys a little helping hand. If you've been listening to this show for a while, you'll know that I'm all about the practical application of the energies offered to us astrologically. And in the last episode, I told you to go and sort your finances out. And then I kind of just left you to your own devices, which in hindsight probably wasn't fair. So today I've brought on special guest Jimmy Truthui to help us get our finances in order. Jimmy is a financial advisor who, side note, you'll learn never really enjoyed maths, and he's going to give you some really helpful tips on how you can start to not only understand money better from a really earth sign based practical perspective, but also the importance of shifting our energy and the way we think, speak, and feel about money, because it's just as important as the former. And I think that's what I connected with the most when it came to Jimmy's advice. He totally understands the conscious, spiritual, and energetic frequency of money is just as paramount as the tangible, practical aspect of it. Monday to Friday, Jimmy runs James Street Financial, but you might be more familiar with his ambassador work with WWF Australia and Earth Hour, or his interludes with the Bachelor franchise. I got so much out of this episode in regards to managing my own finances, in particular my super, and I'm confident that no matter where you sit financially and what kind of a relationship you currently have with money, you'll benefit a heap from this conversation too. Just as a caveat, the insights shared today are general information in nature and not to be taken as personal financial advice. For advice specific to your individual situation, please consult a financial advisor. As always, if you enjoy this episode, please take a screenshot on your phone and share it to your Instagram stories, tagging me at Jordana Levine and tagging Jimmy at jimmys.paradise.
Everybody, you know, my name is Jimmy Truthui. I'm here today to talk to you about finances, and I guess why I'm qualified to do so. I guess 9 to 5 or Monday to Friday, I spend my time running a financial services business and giving everyday people, business owners, kind of all walks of life, financial advice, and I guess telling them how to be good with their money, how to invest. What the hell superannuation is, why you should care, kind of getting them on track. So I think the best way to think of a financial advisor is like a life coach for your money. Yeah.
Okay. So I was always kind of under the assumption that only really, really wealthy people with large amounts of money needed a financial advisor. But is that the case?
No, like everybody needs a financial advisor. It's becoming harder to help everybody because of the government with the regulations and things. So what you find is a lot of firms will have a big client base of wealthy clients. And that doesn't mean to say that everybody can't benefit from it. I mean, everybody got there somehow. So, you know, there's a lot of things out there. So I'm really big on, you know, sharing tips and wisdom. And I think that if you really understand it, you're going to save yourself a world of pain. And, you know, I think you're just going to feel a lot better in your life and in control. And, you know, I think whatever limiting beliefs, you know, you kind of have, it's such a good thing. And when you're on top of it and you can set yourself up well, it kind of balances all the other areas of your life. I think, you know, the biggest stresses in life, you know, a lot of them are money and work and, you know, how you're going to kind of, you know, pay a mortgage down or retire. So it's huge.
Yeah, I guess finances really are like the foundation for most things in our life, whether we want to give much weight to money or not. Like, you can't really help it. Like, to survive in the world, you sort of have to have finances at the helm of a lot of the stuff that you do.
And the thing as well is that in society, people don't really talk about it. So
yes.
I'm in a bit of a privileged position where I'll just like people might be like, oh, but even if, you know, you're talking to someone you've just met and I'm like, oh, yeah, how much did you pay for that? Like, you know, what's your income? And I don't really care because I like if you think of it, I'm a specialist doctor kind of, but for your finance. So you know everything about everybody's situation and, you know, and that, and, you know, people are kind of quite private when it comes to that. And so you should be. I'm not meaning you should talk about it, but when you don't talk to people about how you're feeling or what's going on, you're bottling up that energy and it can impact your life.
Yeah. And I guess a lot of the emotions that people have around money are things like shame, guilt, sort of like miseducation, maybe, like not feeling embarrassed about
embarrassed. Their
finances.
Yeah, 100%. And look, even I've been there. I wasn't always like an expert, you know, like I you know, I've kind of been through that. And I'm like, and I look back and I'm like, oh God, you know, if I knew the stuff I knew now, geez, I'd be light years ahead of you know, where I am now. And but what I want to share is just it's not too late to start. And the thing is, you need to really just say, hey, look, it doesn't matter. Everybody's, you know, been, you know, made, you know, poor financial decisions or, you know, not really understood things. But I wouldn't say that, you know, it's your fault. Like, I mean, I really kind of I'm not big on blaming, but I think that it really should start in the education system.
Yeah.
And I mean, if we were really equipped to step out of the door of school, ready to go and, you know, handle life, everybody would be so much, you know, further ahead, but instead, you know, they're life lessons and you learn along the way. And, you know, it's good because with those lessons, you wouldn't know what you wouldn't want if you didn't go through them. And
absolutely. You know, yeah.
It's all about that journey. So
absolutely.
But you've got to gonna say, hey, enough's enough. Let's face it, front it, face the, you know, shine the light on it. You know, even opening bank statements and things, like people don't do that because of the fear of, you know, credit card bills and debts.
Guilty.
And,
yeah. I'm interested, Jimmy, what was your education around money growing up? Like, did you openly talk about it at home? Was it something that you were always interested in? What was the story?
No, I'm definitely not your typical banking finance guy. I'm actually more in your world, like in like I'm, you know, hugely spiritual. Had a lot of beautiful experiences in my life. I was always, you know, a bit more sporty, adventurous out there. I remember Dad being like, oh, you know, you should do commerce. And I was like, no, I'm going to do auto mechanics with the boys. yeah, you know, it was kind of fun. And then, I guess like I traveled and everything, but I'm not going to admit, it doesn't affect my work now, but I was in like Math C, you know, I wasn't even in the, it's just all the algebra and equations and things like that. The math that I do in this is more around percentages, calculations and investing. And it's really like money 101 that we should have been taught, which is interesting. I mean, you know, How many times do you look at a car and think how many watermelons you can fit in that thing?
Never.
That's the sort of stuff they teach us.
How many clowns fit in the car?
Exactly. Yeah. So, look, I travelled a bit. I went to uni. I was more in a marketing education and study and graduated with marketing. Then I worked for a couple of years. I graduated through the GFC and I just started something and I absolutely hated what I was doing. So I kind of got a blank piece of paper and I just was like, well, look, you know, if I could do anything, what would it be? And it was sort of like, you know, I really love helping people. You know, I like strategy and coming up with things. I think a long-term relationship, you know, it is a bit of sales, but long-term, it's not like a gold chain and a used car or TV. And I kind of put all this stuff together. It was like flexibility around a working life and things. And yeah, people were like, oh, that sounds like financial advice. I was like, what? And this is how bad it was. Like I called Dad up and I said, oh, is this what you do? And he's like, yeah. And I was like, I thought you were just some investment accounting guy. I didn't really understand. I had no interest before that.
Yeah.
And so my education in this space kicked off then. And that was about 10 years ago.
Yeah, wow. And
yeah, so I kind of just, you know, I landed in it and I was weirdly good at it. It was like the first time I was like topping grades and stuff. And I was like, what's going on? So it ended up that, I kind of landed in something that I really love, really passionate about. I love helping people.
Mm.
And, you know, it's just been so beneficial. And so, you know, I'm always learning, but, you know, really in that last 10 years, I'd say I'd gone from, you know, zero knowledge to, you know, pretty well all over it.
Yeah. Now. Well, I guess when you're really passionate about something as well, you just kind of absorb as much knowledge as you can. It's really exciting.
Yeah. Well, like I was like, look, you know, I'm competing against these 60-year-old guys who have done it all their life. The best thing you can do with whatever it is become a master of your craft and throw everything into that. And, you know, if you come out and you do that, suddenly you'll be kind of leading the pack or up there, you know?
It's so interesting what you said about maths and not being particularly, you know, top of the maths class at school, because one of the biggest blocks I think that I've had around money is this story I tell myself that I'm a words gal and that I'm not a numbers girl. And that's the reason that I don't understand money and I'll just get someone else to do it because I'm not a numbers person. But really at the end of the day, it is quite simple. It is quite simple maths, isn't it? It's not, you don't have to be particularly interested in it or good at it to be able to understand money.
No, I'll tell you a secret. I was counting on my fingers when I started and now I'm getting better, but I don't need to do that anymore. So legitimately it is just, you know, understanding the principles of what you're doing. And I think just, you know, when you've got a bit of an idea, then you can reach out and get some help too from an expert or, you know, read some stuff and set it up. But largely at the early years, it's about kind of setting up a solid foundation. And, you know, when you've got a really good foundation and you're set up well, then the thing's not going to come crumbling down.
Mm.
And it's going to let you build that over the years. And, you know, maybe you don't need advice like all the way through, maybe just to set up. But then once you're there, you know, you're on the way. Like you've got it's about having a roadmap and a plan and knowing like, you know, where you're heading and why and what's important to you and what you're looking for. And once you align that with your, you know, your energy, your goals, your passion, your vision, and the finance bit comes into it and work and everything, you know, then you've got a cool little roadmap.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you have that roadmap, you've just got to be, I kind of liken it to, you know, someone saying, hey, you know, let's sail to, you know, South America. And, you know, you set off and it's good because you're on the way. You don't need to know exactly where you're going, but you're sailing, because otherwise you're sitting in the port and, you know, all that equipment's just getting rusty and not used. But if you get like half the way, three quarters of the way, and you go, hey, you know what? Let's go to Europe instead. You're already halfway there.
Yeah.
And it's not a big deal. Like you're on the way. But, you know, I think one of the limiting beliefs and blocks can be, I think maybe not knowing exactly what it is, but if like the end goal, that is, not knowing what you're working toward. And it can be overwhelming to go, hey, what do we want to do in retirement? But you know, that can change. So yeah.
So what do you think is the biggest block that people have with their finances?
A lot of it is energy and belief. Mm. And, you know, I remember when I started, I was like, oh my God, you know, this person's got so much money. And, you know, I was like, whoa. And, you know, and even around income and salary and then seeing what they had in their superannuation and everything. And I'm like, whoa, you know, this is huge. And now the people that I have seen and see and kind of what, you know, what's in front of me is absolutely not overwhelming at all. It's just numbers. You know, so you can see tens of millions and, you know, but even some financial advisors find that overwhelming because, you know, if they're used to just working or you know, with limiting beliefs around the numbers too, so it affects them too. So the biggest thing is that, you know, I think people subconsciously put a ceiling on their abundance and their flow. So they think in their mind of what is a lot of money, but you know, the universe can send you things that are way more than you could have even thought of or imagined. But if you open the door to that, you know, and you just think, hey, it's not. And there's so many examples you could talk to of everyday people. And, you know, I had an old roommate and she had that limiting belief around her career and her income. And I said, why are you limiting yourself? Just open it up. And then, you know, it takes time. It's not an overnight thing. But suddenly when you change that mindset and you attract, you know, those numbers and morph yourself, you can't believe it. Like, you know, it's good. So I would say the biggest blocks are around your own beliefs of what is a lot. Secondly, I find some people in, like, I'm deeply spiritual and so very in line with, you know, I've been following your updates for years as well. And I think that in the spiritual world too, sometimes money can be seen as a dirty thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it can be, it is quite tied to materialism, greed, fear, you know, things like that. And so at the end of the day, it is just energy. It's a form of energy currency where you're exchanging something in exchange for something that you would like or need, like a goods or services type transaction. So don't think of it as anything more than that, because I think that's another block, is that you know, you don't have to be enlightened to not have money.
No, like, and I think also there's such a direct correlation between the worth that we put on money and the worth that we have for ourselves. So how we value ourselves and the value that we see in the work that we do and what we're willing to take for it. And one of the big blocks I see in the spiritual community is that people think that if they're being of service, then, you know, they need to, like, that should be enough, that they shouldn't have to charge for their services, or they feel guilty charging for their services because, oh, they should just want to show up and do it. But that's not the case, because we're all trying to survive in the world and build a living for ourselves. And like you said, money is just another form of energetic currency.
Well, yeah, another way of looking at that too is that, you know, they're winning and you're not. So if they're getting a benefit and you're not. So if you're giving something that's of value and you're changing someone's life or you're helping them out and they're grateful for that, the laws of that are that, you know, you get something for that too in exchange. Otherwise, you're breaking that. And so you can both win. Like, as in, it's a win. It should be a win-win, not a win-lose to you, where you're sort of saying, oh, no, you know, oh, I feel bad charging. And so it is a big thing around the mindset of that. And I see it all the time because, like, can you imagine, you know, you go and kind of step into this world and then jump back out. It's kind of like I've got a foot in each camp. Like,
yeah.
And I remember working in private bank, and that was awful, like, in terms of the energy and the mindsets and, you know, I think how, you know, materialistic. But, yeah, it's sort of, like, funny when you go in and out. And I think another thing around that is, too, when you kind of get too involved in materialism and things, there's a whole marketing culture around, you know, consumption and, you know, money and buying things. And, you know, people get swept up in that too. Yeah. With unnecessary purchases and that's what unravels a lot of financial things, you know, unnecessary subscriptions. You know, you want to feel better, so you jump on, you know, online shopping, like, yeah. You know, just, yeah. Yeah. So, I guess, deeply related. Yeah,
absolutely. And I guess it's about, well, I know it is for me, most definitely, and this is the shift I've been making in the last 12 months, is really being very conscious and present with the purchases that I make, because money can come in, but it's your job to look after it when it arrives, you know. And so for so long, I've always had money coming in. It's never been an issue for me, but keeping it there is definitely an issue.
The leakages
I have been my issue. So I've really had to bring some presence and mindfulness and conscious thought to it.
Well, that's it, like 100%. So you know that most lotto winners lose it all in a year or two.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So they have this sudden inflow of abundance and money, and then they just get rid of it because, you know, whether it's like, oh, I want to give this away, I want to buy this, I want to do that, I want to help them out here, suddenly it's gone. And and that's back to, you know, saying, hey, I want it, but you're not holding on to it. And so that's another mindset thing. And it's also really like, it's just a bit of the finance behind it too. Like, if you're in a situation like that, the best thing you could do is get advice, invest that, set it up differently, and then that will last a long time. And basically you can help people for a very long time just in increments, as opposed to this thing that's a one-off hit and then is gone forever.
Yeah.
So keeping it in the wallet or the purse is a big thing as well.
And then I guess, like, there must be this really fine line, and you probably see it quite a bit, is, you know, like, being smart with your money and then being tight with your money. Because it's like, you should be able to enjoy it, right?
100%. Yeah. I mean, we've all seen some grumpy retiree just sort of being very frugal. I remember working at a golf course, and we're in the Sunshine Coast, and I was just like, oh my God, you know. It was literally just like, you're in this beautiful, you know, course, and, you know, like, it would cost a bit and it's nice. And I mean, haggling over 10 cents, it's just kind of, but look, so some people have gotten there by being that way. I certainly don't want to get into a wealthy position at the end and be like that. I think that whole law of attraction as well is paying it forward and doing unexpected things, not expecting in return, and you know, that opens the flow to come back to you as well. So you don't need to necessarily be that. I think just mindful with what your purchases are and if they're serving a purpose. And, you know, another thing is you don't have to say yes to everything, and probably how you respond is a big impact too. So when you say, like, you know, the words I am and how powerful they are, when you say I can't afford, that is a very limiting, form of energy that will block you too. So rather than saying that I can't afford this, You can say, you know, oh, I'm prioritizing something else right now. You know what I mean? So,
yeah,
like rather than saying, oh, you know, I'd love that, but I can't afford that, just go, oh, look, you know, it sounds amazing, you know, but I've got another priority right now that I'm putting my money and energy into. So, you know, then you kind of, I guess, changing the conversation away from lack.
I think that's paramount, and it's one of the things I was trying to communicate with this Taurus full moon that we just had. You know, like it's offering us all of this potential for abundance, but it's what you do with it. And if you say, oh, well, there's all this abundance here, but I can't afford to do anything with it because I'm in this position, you're coming from a place of lack and scarcity. So you're cancelling the abundance out almost immediately without even doing anything yet. So like really shifting that mindset and the way that you look at your finances, whether you have a dollar in your account or $1 million in your account, each increment in between, looking at it with an abundance mindset. So yeah, totally relate to what you're saying.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about debt, because I think that a lot of people are in debt, especially a lot of people of our generation. Where do we start with that? Because I feel like sometimes, you know, you might start to have all this money coming in and you want to do amazing things with it, and then you've got this huge like hex debt sitting there or credit card debt sitting there. And is it best just to pay all of that off, or like what's the best way to tackle debt?
If it's bad debt, pay it off. If it's good debt, don't worry about it. And so good and bad is good is an investment that's going to grow in value, like a house or an investment property. So if you've got an investment property, it's most of the time, like every situation is different, but most of the time it's better to have as much debt on that as possible.
Okay.
On the investment property. And that depends on your tax situation, the ownership structure of the property. You know, if you've got it in a trust or a company or your own name. But even with houses, right, like a lot of people get toward the end of, you know, their working careers and they're sort of, you know, mid-50s, getting to sort of, you know, early mid-60s going, oh, should we pay off the mortgage or pay into super? And that's sort of something where, look, you should really like consider your own circumstances and get advice, but, you know, largely just do both, because when you've got more in super, I've gone on a tangent, I'm going to come back to debt, but why super is so good is that it's the most tax effective structure there is, you know, in terms of where you should hold your money. And and basically at the moment, each person can basically save in there up to $1.6 million each. And when you get that in there and then you decide to retire, and if you move that to a pension phase, the current rules are that you've got to draw a minimum of 4% and a maximum of 10%. So what it means is that if you got to that situation and you had that much in your super fund and you moved it to pension phase, you draw like a minimum of around, you know, 80K tax-free a year, with a max of up to about 160. You can always pull lump sums out, but what I'm saying is that if you're drawing that 80K tax-free and your partner is too, you know, you're kind of laughing. So there's no tax to pay on that, and then the investment can still grow and that'll last you a very long time. Whereas if you were kind of heading in and you just paid down your house debt and you didn't have any superannuation, you'd have a really nice place to live, but you know, you don't really have an income, and then you've got to try to somehow get the age pension, which is getting harder too. So then coming all the way back down to the spectrum where, you know, there's credit card debts, hex debts, car loans, personal loans, all that sort of stuff. When we're talking, and this was a bit of a light bulb for me, you know, if we're sitting in front of somebody and, you know, we're talking around a long-term investment, you know, an amazing investment return is, you know, average of 10% a year. And that's in investment growth in, you know, shares and things like that. I mean, it's not always going to be like that, but I mean, it's kind of like a long-term game. So if you had money and no debt, and we're saying to you, like, oh, look, you know, let's try and shoot for the 10%, like, you know, and then on the flip side, you've got debt, and we're talking about credit cards and things. So credit cards, some of the cheaper sort of low interest, they're like 13%. You know, then they were up to 15, 18, some are 23%. So just think about that. I mean, on one hand, if you're investing, we're talking about how good a 10% return would be. And if you get that, that's awesome. But on the flip side, we're talking about debt. And if you're paying the bank 13, 15, 20, 25% in interest, isn't that just insane?
It's like, insane.
Yeah. So you're basically, the bank is using you as an investment to make money, and you've got to keep paying it all off. And then, yeah, so it's just crazy. So credit cards are bad. You know, personal loans are bad. Hex is, you know, Hex, don't worry about it. I mean, like, you're going to just pay that off when you do your tax anyway. So when you're over a certain income, it's just going to get paid off anyway. So don't worry about Hex. But, yeah, those – and the Hex loan rates are very low. But the other two are just not a good idea. And, you know, we talked about a house debt and investment debt. And again, I mean, look, a house debt is non-deductible. So the quicker you pay it down, the better. So it's not a bad idea to, you know, try and pay that down really quickly, but not at the expense of, you know, not doing super too. Because if you're in your 30s and you can put in a bit of extra super now every year, whether that be $1,000, $3,000, $5,000, you can do it as a salary sacrifice, which means it's a tax deduction. So it means that it brings down the tax you pay to the government. You're building up your long-term savings by doing it. And when you compound that growth from age 30 to sort of 65, 70, you'll get, you know, those numbers we talked about, you'll easily hit that. You know, if you've got, if you're working and, you know, you'll get there. So it's kind of like a bit of both. With credit cards, I'd probably say the most overwhelming thing could be, you know, whether you're embarrassed, you don't want to talk about it with your partner. You know, basically how they work is they get you into a position where it really stretches your cost of living and affordability, because if that debt and you're not paying it down keeps accumulating, you can get to a position where you've got income from work coming in, a lot of your expenses can be going to the credit cards, which are, you know, can be the same as what you're paying off on a mortgage. And you can get into this situation where you're not really getting ahead. So if you've got it, you've got to really list the cards and things down. Make a little spreadsheet or a notepad. List them down. Then find out what the interest rate of the debt is. So whether it's 10, 13, 15, 20 percent, find out the balance owing on it, and then kind of work out in order which one you should pay down first. So you can either do this thing called like a debt avalanche or a debt snowball, and you kind of, you know, channel all the extra income into one, and then as soon as that one's crossed off, you have a little party, and then you just channel all your money into the next one, and then you cross that one off, and then you've got even more to just channel into the others, and it creates this snowball avalanche effect where, you know, rather than paying all of them off on a minimum, you just kind of, you know, putting a fire hose onto this thing and getting them down.
I love that idea. That sounds really good.
And also a kind of you can get a no interest sort of balance transfer, and there's websites that you can kind of call up and like you can put it in and see that they might offer 0% interest for like 24 months. So what you can do is kind of, you know, with some of those credit card debts or things like that, you can kind of say, all right, well, can we just balance transfer them onto one? And and effectively it just can help pay it down. But where people get stuck with those is, you know, they can do that and then suddenly just start spending again. So, you know, you've got to come back to the root cause. You've got to come back and go, okay, we're going to just like buckle down. It's going to be a tough couple of years. But if you don't do that now, it's going to come back later in some point in time. So you need to draw a line in the sand and you need to kind of say, okay, now is the point that we'll deal with it. And your future self will thank you tenfold for doing that. But if you keep ignoring it, it's just going to like kicking the can down the road. You know, it's just going to get to a point where you're going to have to deal with it at some point, and you're really going to impact your kind of long-term, you know, retirement and future.
Yeah. Okay. So credit card debt, that's the first thing people need to start tackling to get themselves in a better financial situation.
Yeah. 100%.
All right. What are some other things that people can start to do to educate themselves a little bit more about money? Because I think that's such a massive thing for people, is this story of, oh, I never learned about money, you know, like we were talking about before. They never told me at school. My parents never taught it to me. So I've just had this miseducation. I don't understand it. So if people want to understand it a little bit better, what are some of the things they can do to better educate themselves?
Definitely, like Google's your friend. So, you know, Google, you know, you can kind of jump on a website, read books, blogs, like, you know, just money tips. There's so many things out there. Just avoid getting sucked into a scam with that too, because a lot of those people will kind of sometimes have an agenda, I guess, of, you know, wanting to funnel you into their product or their you know, investment thing. So I think if you just say purely from an educational perspective, what can I learn? I'd just say, look, become an expert on super. Just what I mean is, like, most people don't open those statements, but I'm telling you, that's gold. Like, that is the most tax effective way that you can save for the long term. And it's awesome. And people ignore it because they don't understand it. But if you find out where it is, how much you've got, how many accounts you have, and basically just tidy that up, you can get one-off advice. You can, you know, set that up. Once you have a little bit of a plan, like I said before, if you put in a bit extra and you do it via your employee, you know, with work, it's a tax deduction. If you do a little bit a year for like 30, 40 years on top of what you're paying in there, you know, you're laughing. So
can I ask you a question about super?
Yeah.
I worked for like 10 years in publishing for a company, and so they paid my super for me, and that was all great. And then I left and I started working for myself, and I consolidated all of my super into the one fund, but just have not contributed to it at all in the last 5 years.
Most self-employed don't do it, but it's a balance. So I understand why. The thing is that business is always a risk and it's not a sure thing. And so from a diversification and risk management perspective, it's always a good idea to just keep paying your super, because, you know, otherwise you're just trying to rely on, you know, the end of, you know, your working career, having a business that you sell, and that's what everyone wants to do. But, you know, it may or may not happen. You know, you can't kind of foresee that. And the best advice is that if you are self-employed, keep paying your super. You know, absolutely keep paying into your super. And there's a really good calculator on an ASIC website called Money Smart, and if you just Google ASIC money compound interest calculator, I love that thing. So you can kind of put in and you just go like, this is how we would have cheated at school if we didn't have to, you know, use the calculators or whatever. But online here with Google, like, you just chuck in your starting balance of what you got in super, how many years till you want to retire, like, you know, I think the age is about 70 these days, unfortunately. Okay. Chuck that in and then put in the interest rate of what you think the fund is earning. Like, you know, 8% is probably a good conservative kind of number, or, you know, you can even go 7% in there. I always dial it up to 10 because I'm kind of, you know, making mine grow pretty good. But and then
not you can brag. Kind
of, yeah, but you can kind of then just see, you know, how much are you putting in? And if you're putting in nothing, you'll see what you'll end up with. Mm. But if you put in, you know, like $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, you can put up to 25 in that way a year. So, you know, you can kind of play around with those figures and just go, oh, look, you know, if I put in X amount a year, what will it look like? And it will show you what you'll end up with at the end. And that's a really good motivator because you can kind of then go, oh, like I really should be doing this. And
yeah, interesting. Is there like a percentage of your earnings that you think we should be contributing to super?
Yeah. So just go with 10%. Like, so the rate is 9.5% of your salary at the moment, and it's meant to go up. But you know, effective, if you could do 15, that's great. Whatever it is, just whatever you're earning, you know, if you've got the cash flow and you know, you can, you know, up to the 25,000 is great a year, and it's tax deductible is a contribution. But yeah, it's really like an individual, you know, circumstantial thing as well. And if you do kind of get an inheritance or come into money too, you know, you can do another one, which is 100, but it's non-deductible a year. And then there's all sorts of other rules too. Like you can bring that forward and do a hit of 300 in 1 year, and then kind of wait another 3 years. But I think back in the day, people used to just sort of get right up to that point of retiring and go, oh, cool, like, you know, let's get advice now. Let's build the super now. And you can't do that now. You can't just go and, you know, dump a heap of money, and you've got to do it slowly and over time.
That's so interesting. I actually didn't realize that. And to be honest with you, like my whole life, my dad has talked about super. Like he's always like, I'm saving for my super fund, you know? And I was always like, oh my God, Dad, that is so boring. But I totally get it now. I get it, and I see the importance of it. And like I said, I haven't been contributing to mine for, probably the past 5 years, but I'm definitely going to make that priority now.
Well, it's the easiest thing that everybody listening can go and do is, you know, dig out the thing, dig out the balance, dig out the statement, go, where the hell is it? Is it good or not? What's my return? How much have I got? Do I need to pull them into one fund? You know, am I putting extra in? Yeah, like the gold at the end of the rainbow is that when you are, you know, retiring, that your money doesn't have to work half as hard. So, you know how we're talking about those incomes? Well, you know, it's the equivalent of, in a taxable income. If you're a couple and you're pulling that minimum, it's 160 is the equivalent of about a $250,000 salary. So it's quite a big difference.
Yeah, huge difference. How does it work with like partners in relationships that retire together? Can you combine your funds, or is it always a separate individual thing?
There's a thing about super splitting, but largely your super is yours, so it's tied to your name. You've got a balance, and your partner does too, and. Probably one of the biggest areas that, you know, women get, I guess, shortchanged is, you know, what we're talking about value. And I think when you have kids, if you're sort of, you know, a stay-at-home mom or you're working at home, this is the biggest thing. Like people don't realize that's a job. Mm. And if you as a mom had gone back into the workforce and you needed someone to kind of look after the kids and everything, to hire all that help and everything, you'd be paying $80,000 or more a year. Yeah, so the role of a mother is worth about $80,000 of income a year. And that's where the value that you bring to your family and house is invaluable, because that enables the other partner to work and help bring in income too. And the bit where I think they get ripped off is that there isn't salary coming in. And so because there isn't a salary coming in, there's no super money going in either. And that's where you get this disparity, because if someone's had, you know, 10 years, 5-10 years off to have kids, you know, and then going back in the workforce, or, you know, even longer, you can kind of end up with a smaller balance. So, yeah, you can contribute to your partners, you can kind of build them up together. But you know, at the end, I mean, it depends how much. You can have your own self-managed super fund, you can you know, have your own super balances and super split. It's really, up to the couple.
Yeah, okay. And I mean, it definitely sounds like something that you would want to be talking to a financial advisor about, especially when it comes to things like an inheritance coming in, or
absolutely.
I don't know, like royalties from a book or whatever it might be, like really kind of talking to someone about how can I best manage this? How's it going to serve me?
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, I think when you have a bit of an idea and that thing's under control, you kind of, it helps in every other area of life, you know, because you're not sort of, you know, we're talking about ignoring statements and bills because they might look nasty, but you know how good it's going to feel when you're on top of it and you're opening that stuff and you know, and you're like, yeah, I've done it. You don't have to worry anymore. So I think kind of just on all levels, like spiritually, mentally, emotionally, you know, from just a practical day-to-day point of view, getting on top of your finances and money and, you know, as soon as you can is just so important.
Yeah, and I guess it's about having awareness of the position you're in and then the clarity about where you want to go. Do you think that's it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a really good place to start when you're going, what are my views too, is, you know, how does this make me feel? Like, and this is a bit of a weird psychological.
No, you're
area,
speaking my language, Jimmy.
Yeah. So you sit down and just go, okay, well, you know, how does this make me feel? Like, if I get a statement in the mail, am I, you know, embarrassed, afraid? Like, so you just write those things down in your journal. Then you go, well, why? And then explore that. And it can help untangle those mindset abundance blocks about your relationship with money. And, you know, do you see it as a good thing? Do you see it as bad or evil? And why is it even duality? It's just energy. And I mean, if you kind of delve into that a bit and understand your own subconscious blocks, that can really be the key to sort of, you know, taking that first step forward. And then we talked about all those practical things too, whether you're in, you know, if you've got debts, why you should pay them down, the steps you should follow, and you know, it's pretty practical, and you can just Google this stuff too, and there's information out there. I'm kind of working on a free ebook I was going to give out at some point. I've just got to get around to. I need someone to kind of look at it and go, it sounds good, because I'm delving into this sort of you know, pretty hectic world of, you know, acronyms, terms, and then I'm kind of stepping back out and trying to make it sound simple. It's quite a challenge.
It's a gift as well. Well, if you need someone to look over it, more than happy to have a read through for you.
Oh, I love that. I love that. But yeah, well, if we can do that and then send it out to everybody, I mean, that's got everything in it. Like, it's got the 101s that you should do in a bit more depth. So,
beautiful.
Yeah, but otherwise you could just Google this stuff and, you know, it's pretty practical steps of what you should do.
Do you have any, are there any books out there that are just like the oracle for this sort of thing?
Look, I did read Barefoot Investor, and he's got a good following, and the Money 101 stuff is good. I don't really like some of the other stuff in it, because it's not, like, for instance, he was sort of pushing everyone into Host Plus and saying they should go into that. I've had clients come to me with that, and I kind of go out and I find the best of breed, like whatever the best is out there. And I've done that, and it's cheaper than Host Plus. So going to an advisor isn't always like a bad thing, and there's better things out there.
Yeah. And like you said, it's your personal circumstances, right? So I guess it's hard to address everybody in a book.
It is. And one of the biggest things missing is advice around what is important to you, because, you know, if you're heading down this path, it might be completely inappropriate and cost you a lot of money. Mm. So just even things like structures, you know, whether you should set up an investment company or a trust. So, and why you would want to do that, and it can actually save you a lot in the long run too. You know, we talked about, you know, building superannuation and growing that, and everybody's, you know, very unique in, I guess, what they want out of life and why and what they're trying to achieve. So, the Money 101 stuff, there's great books like that. Is a good book to read just to get your cash flow in order. You know, talks a bit about paying down debt and things like that, which is good.
Cool. Well, thank you. I have one more question for you. What star sign are you, Jimmy?
Oh, so I'm Virgo. I was.
Do you know that all financial advisors I know or have spoken to are Virgos?
Really?
Yeah.
It's so funny. I don't know, like I'd always read them and I'm like, no, that's not me. But then I'm on a cusp, like I'm 22nd of September, 85. So I am on the cusp too. And I've read that there is some views, I don't know what you think, but about there being a cusp sign between Virgo, Libra.
Yes.
And I was like, and when I read those, I'm like, oh, 100%, that feels like it's me down to the T.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, but then some people like, no, astrology is like black and white. It's like stamp, not you're one or the other, that's it. So, yeah.
No, it's absolutely not black and white. And I guess it has so much to do with your full natal chart as well. So, like your moon sign and your rising sign. It's so funny because Virgos, you know, Virgos are an earth sign, so they can be very practical and it's all about the tangible material world.
Absolutely.
And nature as well, like, you know, connecting with nature, being close to nature, using nature. And I know you do a lot of work with WWF and wildlife and all that sort of stuff. So you're fitting the Virgo mold from that perspective. And
100%.
Also with numbers and organization and planning. Does that describe you?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, 100%. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me today and doing this interview. I think it's going to be really helpful for people. I know it was super helpful for me, especially this debt snowball. Is that what we call it?
Debt snowball or debt avalanche.
I like that. I really like that idea. And I'm really going to start thinking more about contributing to my super as well. If people want to find more out about you and what you do and your services, where can they go?
So website, jamesstreetfinancial.com.au.
Beautiful. And Instagram, just for fun?
Instagram, jimmys.paradise.
Beautiful. All right, I'm going to put all of that in the show notes of the show.
Yeah.
So nice chatting to you. Hope you enjoyed that episode with Jimmy. Like I said in the intro, I got so much out of it and I'm so glad that I got the opportunity to share it with you guys. If you're interested in becoming a Lunar Lover member, there's some exciting new things happening in there. I've just introduced a 14-day free trial. So if you've been interested to see what happens once you become a Lunar Lover member and have a bit of a poke around, you can now do that without paying a cent. You can cancel at any time within the first 14 days. I've just put a new meditation in there that will help you get to sleep at night. I don't know about you guys, but the Taurus full moon really messed with my sleep. And I've also found just the energy of Scorpio season and the Mercury retrograde that we're currently experiencing has really kind of got my energy fired up right before I go to sleep. So I really needed something just to calm me down and get me in the sleep zone. So I've put together this guided meditation, which has worked for me, and I'd love it to work for you. I'm actually going to keep it in the meditation library permanently. I'd usually take the meditations down after the lunar cycle is complete, but this one's going to stay in there. If you join now, you'll get access to the current meditation that was in there for the Scorpio new moon. And then on November 27, we are experiencing the Sagittarius new moon. So there'll be a new guided meditation available to guide you through the energies of the Sag new moon. You'll also get some journal prompts for the Sag new moon, and you'll also get access to the Sagittarius new moon online circle. That's where I guide you through video, through a delicious new moon ritual, and we'll really dive deep into the energies of that Sagittarius new moon. If you'd like to become a Lunar Lover member, all you have to do is click the link in the show notes or head to jordanalevine.com/Lunar Lover. I'm your host, Jordana Levine, and you've been listening to Lunar Lover, the podcast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.